Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Big week. Lots of stuff this week.
Biggish week. Biggish week.
Lots of stuff going on. We got the Apple results, generated charts.
Oh, yeah. Lots of money. Lots of money.
I mean, I wrote about this in Macworld, but I'm not kidding when I said that I got the numbers and I put them in. And I was like, that can't be right. I had to change a bunch of the scales on my charts. I actually had to be like, take the max scale and bump it up a little bit, especially in like percentage growth of the Mac and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 70%.
I mean,
yeah.
It looks, it literally, if you look at the chart, it's such an outlier that that's got to be an error, but it's not an error. They had, it was funny. I was reading Ben Thompson's Stratechery newsletter yesterday, and he said what I said in my thing too, which is it was basically a holiday quarter, except it was January through March, but it was the third largest quarter Apple's ever had, and I mean, and the Mac has had its three best quarters of all time in the last three quarters,
which is bananas for a 40-year-old almost product line, right?
And it's obvious, and they will say, you know, the pandemic has driven a bunch of this,
and combined with the M1, I think those two, the M1 in some ways couldn't have hit it a better time almost.
Yeah. So you put all that in there. Although I think it's also interesting that Apple, you know, is talking about how the inventory stuff fascinates me, where they basically said we aren't going to be able to make enough iPads and Macs to satisfy demand this coming quarter. And somebody asked him on the call, how does that work? And Tim was like, well, basically, or maybe that was Luca. He's like, basically, you've got your cushion and you used it all.
We ate through it. Yeah.
Yep. And that's how we were able to blow out this quarter, but we got no cushion left, and we're going to be supply constrained and not, which I took as a positive sign, because they're warning about the numbers not looking so good in 3 months. But what they're saying is they don't think that the demand is going to fall as an issue. I mean, I'm sure it might fall a bit, but like that their issue is not that they've sold them all. The issue is that there's still people still want to buy them, and they're not going to be able to make enough.
And more to the point, like that we know the industry as a whole has constraint problems. Everything, like automakers are reporting like shutting down production things because they cannot get enough chips. And it seems to be, there was that somewhat, you know, scratch your head, go Google some stuff, comment about legacy nodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is where we learn about legacy nodes.
Legacy nodes.
Tell me what the legacy nodes do. It's just like,
I think legacy nodes used to sponsor one of my podcasts.
I love
it. 15% off legacy nodes.
I saw the legacy nodes open at the Fillmore for Matthew Sweet in 1993. I'm just making things up now.
Yeah, so I mean, but it seemed to be my reading of that, which mainly was like reading a CNBC article, was that it's not necessarily Apple's own chip production.
Right.
Although
it's not
part of it. It's all the ancillary stuff.
Yeah.
It's all the other chips, the power management, the display controllers, all that stuff.
And that's the reason that Apple, like Tim's line here, I thought was really funny, because he said, in order to answer that question accurately, we would need to know the demand from each of the players, and that's from across other industries, and that how that's going to change over the next few months. And it's very difficult to give you a good answer. I think we have a good handle on our demand, but you know what everybody else is doing, I don't know. And so we'll do our best. That's all I can tell you.
It's nuts, because it's not just we're talking about like, oh, how many chips does Google want? How many chips does Samsung want? Right? Like, we're talking about literally any company like, that makes something with silicon in it, which is basically everyone.
Well, and it's like we have a Bluetooth controller that we use that is also in cars and in whatever. And it's like, we can't get it. We can't make that iPad or that Mac, even though it's not the important part, but it's important. You can't not have it. Or some other part that's just a little, like it's a part that's very commonly used, and that's what's going to constrain them, which is,
And even more so, the fact that Apple, in comparison to some but not all, depending on what they're making, like they also want a huge volume, right? It's like, we don't need 100 Bluetooth chips or even 1,000. We need like millions of these chips. And you know, that's true in other places too, right? Like, because there's lots of other industries where it's like making little, I don't know, dongles or something like that that have like a little Bluetooth chip in it, right? Or smart home tech or something like that. And it's like, they may be selling in high volume as well, but like Apple's selling tens of millions of these things. Yeah. They don't need just a few.
Yeah, and that is the, and even though they've got something Ben Thompson pointed is like, it's something Apple apparently can't buy its way out of. Now, right. I would say they probably can to an extent, right? They could probably go to the front of the line of some of these things by just spending money on it. But there is a limit to what they'll spend because they don't want to blow out their profit margins that much in order to just get sales that will probably just be deferred, not denied. But also, you know, there's a limit to what how you can, you know, bribe companies to get ahead of their other contracts on the assembly line, right? So this is an interesting case where Apple has a lot of power and a lot of leverage in this situation, but even Apple can't do this. They can't solve
right.
this one.
Exactly.
Legacy
yeah,
nodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Legacy
yeah,
nodes.
Yep, legacy nodes. Legacy nodes.
They're the worst.
You know, use code 6COLORS for 35% off legacy nodes.
Oh boy. I was going to say use code legacy nodes for 35% off an iPad that won't ship to you. either way, they went on sale and reports are that a lot of the iPads and iMacs that went on sale, their ship dates are already in like June.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe
and we
even
didn't
late June.
Yeah. Because I mean, I don't remember if there was initially, they just said, what, late May, maybe, when they announced them?
Yeah.
I don't think there was a hard date attached. And then I think when people started ordering them, they were it was like the 21st of May or something like that. It was late May, but it clearly there, the quantities are limited to get them that soon, which is interesting. I don't know how that's going to ripple through the rest of the year, but it's not a problem that you. The other thing is, you know, like you said about the money not solving the problem, it's like it's not a problem that you solve fast either, because upping the yields is not really something like there are limits to how many chips a factory can put out, and there are limits to how many production lines you can have working on these things, and you can't just build a new factory. Like, you can, but it takes some time, yeah. right? Like,
it's not the, well, it's a little like the vaccine conversations about, like,
right,
you can't
right.
use a vaccine to solve an outbreak because it takes time to build vaccine and to get vaccine in people's arms. And
right.
that like, the upfront time, it's not an immediate fix. It's a long-term fix or a medium-term yeah. fix even, but it's not a short-term fix. And that's where they are. So that was fascinating. There was a bunch of, you know, like for such a great quarter, there were some tidbits, not as many tidbits maybe. Oftentimes, I think the biggest tidbits come when Apple is trying to characterize things that were disappointing to people, and there were
sure.
none, so it was less interesting. But the one that got me, and I wrote about, and I know you mentioned it in your forthcoming Macworld column,
yeah.
Is Tim Cook talking about, and I wrote a little piece about it, the Apple moving with the times. And it was
right.
that moment where, first off, good question. Well, weird question, but good topic by Krish Sankar, the analyst at Cowen, who said, like, here's a big philosophical question. It's essentially something we've talked about before, which is nobody really thinks too much about it, but like one of the biggest risks to Apple's business is literally having their business broken into pieces or completely changed by legislation or regulation. And the EU came out with an announcement this morning that they consider Apple's mm-hmm. App Store purchase rules to be anti-competitive and monopolistic. So
specifically in I think in this case, specifically to do with streaming music.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, and
they're looking into a bunch of stuff.
It touches specifically on Spotify, but I would argue that this is the Amazon, this is the Kindle ebook thing.
Yes.
As well, the idea that Apple has a competitor and Apple wants to take its cut of all competitors to itself, which means that Apple yep. has basically said, you can be on our store only if we take your profit margin. Like, literally, that's what it is. We take it. You either give it to us, and so with Spotify, that's the issue here. But, you know, and there's nuances to this debate, and we can get into it. But I think that it is the risk, a huge risk, is that someone somewhere is going to say, you have to let, you know, you have to change your business in this way. And that could be a huge risk for Apple because it could have
right.
lots of ramifications that could really hurt Apple's business. Like they could lose billions of dollars in revenue if a rule like this went into effect. And so it is a huge risk, maybe not existential, but like it's a big risk for Apple. And Cook's answer, just, you know, the fact that he said the App Store and other parts of Apple are not cast in concrete. We can move and are flexible with the times. Look at the 15% instead of 30% in the small business program. So we continue to learn. And I was fascinated by this because, Dan, I don't think we would characterize almost anything that Apple did with App Store policy especially about money, for its first decade as being moving with the times. And I think set in concrete is pretty close to it. The way I phrased it is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They made so much money, and everybody was making money, basically, that they're like, why would we change anything? Even things that were obviously weak about the App Store, they just never changed them.
They decided to ride close to the metal, right? Like, I think it was just it hasn't burned us yet, right? Like,
right.
So far as we keep doing it, then it's fine. And if we need to change it, we'll change it. But you and I have joked frequently in the past about, like, whenever they point at the App Store rules and being like, well, we don't make the rules. Here are the rules made.
But you literally do make the rules.
You literally make the rules. And that's the thing, is like, they can adjust that arbitrarily, literally however they want. And and the fact that they, you know, we all agreed there's nothing altruistic about the, you know, the dropping the commission to 15% for the revenue, right? It is a move which works well for them because they look more generous and it looks more competitive and it looks like they're pushing the envelope a bit.
And it doesn't really hurt them. And it lets them call it out. Like, that, you know, when they get interviewed, when Kara Swisher interviews Tim, or you know, when they make a statement like this on the conference call, it allows them to go, look, here's a great example of us changing with the times. Well, yeah, that's why you did it. So
and I think it lets them have that great bit, which I think they pointed out. I think it was in that interview, but it might have been elsewhere, where it's like Tim Cook or whoever the executive was like, look, the rate on the App Store, the commission's never gone up. It's only gone down. And we're like, but like only just recently has it gone down, and you've been doing this for more than a decade.
And you know, there are like Spotify and Apple and that whole thing with the EU. There's a lot of complexity there because Apple definitely views the App Store and the SDK of iOS as things that it essentially gives to developers, and in exchange it wants a piece of the action. That's essentially how Apple views it. And this is the thing where I think when Tim Cook talks about moving with the times, I think this is what's at the core of it, which is Apple, I think, recognizes that they're going to have to make changes. But what they want to do is they want to make changes that they propose to escape scrutiny, because what they don't want is to have things imposed upon them. And I look at this and I think there's like the danger here for Apple. The big danger is that somebody is going to force them to drop all demands for using Apple's payment mechanisms when there's probably... You know they did that thing with the Amazon renting movies inside apps and stuff, where there's like we created a new program. Well, maybe what will end up happening is that Apple will create that program for all categories in which Apple is competing on services, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be, I look at the EU thing and I'm like, guys, this is easy. Just let music stores and bookstores use their own payment methods. And that'll make Fortnite, Epic Games angry, right? But I think Apple's got a stronger case against Epic Games because Apple doesn't have... I mean, you could say Apple Arcade competes with it, but I mean, it's not the same. It's not the same. But this is an exact competition set, right? Spotify and Apple Music could directly compete. And so this is what you'll end up seeing. Leaving aside the debate of who's right and who's wrong, because I think it's a very complex, I think what you're seeing is we'll move with the times also kind of means we want to make changes that are substantive but don't give everything away, because we're afraid that you're going to take everything away from us as a regulator. So let's make a deal, right?
And I think there's an advantageous part of that to Apple, too. And I would argue in some ways maybe they should have done this. This is the risk, again, of riding really close to the line here, is by the time something is imposed upon you, it's too late to make the changes.
Yes.
And I think by, honestly, there's a strong argument that maybe they should have let, you know, for example, let Amazon's Kindle app let you buy books years ago. And you know why? It's because they haven't lost anything. That's not revenue they're making. That's putative revenue that maybe we could be making if Amazon does a thing that they will never, ever do.
Right. So it has the net effect. Nothing. It has the net effect of giving Apple an unfair advantage on its platforms where iBooks has a better buying experience than the Kindle. And it's completely built on top of that rule. And so that rule's net effect is not money at all. That rule is it makes the Kindle app bad and makes iBooks look better in comparison, and Apple...
But even so, it's not... It didn't make iBooks do particularly well, right?
Yeah,
like
that's
it was not the advantage they wanted.
And that, and so the net result is just that the platform is worse, right? That's the net result, which is why it was so absurd. So when I look at this and I see the stuff with Spotify, I start... That was my immediate first thought is, this is the way out of it for Apple, is to create some new programs around certain categories that allow you to use your own payment system, just like Amazon with the movie rentals and some cable companies and stuff, just like Amazon, because it will get the maybe strongest argument for Apple making competition impossible off their back, because the worst, one of the existential scenarios is that something that some American politicians have talked about, which is uncoupling apps from Apple, which is on one level is supremely stupid because they don't seem to understand, like, no one wants an empty smartphone, right? Nobody's going to get an empty smartphone. That's such a bad user experience. Apple's apps are on there. But they would say, oh, well, for true competition, Apple shouldn't own any apps, which is like, I don't even know how that would work. Like, apps are an extension of the system in some cases, but not in others. But that would be an extreme situation if, like, Apple couldn't run the App Store or Apple couldn't make apps for its own platforms, right? That would be very, very bad. So you back out of there and you're like, no. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to create a music subscription service program where you can be in there and then it's okay. You can be Spotify and you can charge people directly. And we're going to create a book program. We're going to create a fitness program. We're going to create, in areas where we're competing, we're going to allow our competition to compete with us. And have a choice of how they want to implement it. And what that does is get, what they would hope that would do is sort of like get the easiest decisions to make against Apple off the plate, right? Get it out of the way.
Yeah, no, I think there is a lot of sense to that. And I think it's going to be interesting because between this EU thing, which is going to take some time, and is covering a lot of broad area, and the Epic Games thing, the trial of which starts this week, I believe. Apple is in a super risky position right now because it is now, I think, hit the point where it gets much harder for it to make a decision and get out of anything. If it feels like it's going to, people have made the point that win or lose, the case with Epic, I think, stands to really hurt Apple potentially either way. And I think it's not great for users either way either, right? Because I think that there's an argument where Apple comes out of this winning, and that just locks everything down further because Apple is like, oh, emboldened by our position. Everything we're doing is great. Let's just keep doing it. And it maybe even be weirder because you might end up with a sort of split decision between what gets decided in this Epic case and what gets decided in the EU, which then potentially means Apple having to adhere to different guidelines depending on where in the world you are, which it's already been forced to do. There was that weird story about how in Russia it now has to offer apps that this government has sanctioned or whatever. It's like, I don't know that that's a position that we want to be in either.
Yeah.
That can
Although
be strange.
They didn't implement it the way, like, everybody was like, the law says you've got to have these pre-downloaded. And instead what happens is in setup, it gives you a list and say, would you like to download these? And you can just ignore it.
Right. But I mean, it's the same thing that Apple has also come under fire for in the past with its relationship with China as well, right? Like, it's like, well, there are different rules for different places, and that can sometimes get a little sticky, especially if some of those places are authoritarian regimes. But I think that the Epic case, there are arguments there that I think that Apple has a very open shut chance of winning, but it also depends on how well everything is understood, right? Like you mentioned politics and the politicians want to regulate things and not really having a clear grasp on how would that work. And I think there are potentially some really, you know, I think the courts in general, you know, do much more work to sort of get to that point. I'm thinking, of course, of like Alsup was the judge on the Oracle recently concluded Oracle case. Oracle Google case where he learned Java so that he could figure out how to, you know, how to sort of rule on that case. And so I'm hopeful that that kind of research is what goes into this because, you know, things like the monopoly on the App Store is like, well, that's a tricky one, right? Is it a monopoly in app stores? Is it a monopoly on Apple's platform? Is that possible to have a monopoly on your own platform? There's a lot of questions there, and I don't think that there are super easy answers in how you handle that. And then meanwhile, there's stuff going on in the other parts of the industry too. Like Microsoft, for example, this week lowered its commission rate on PC games. Very important. PC games on Windows, not on the Xbox. The Xbox still takes, I think, probably the same 30%. But yeah, the Windows
and
rate
that's
is
through
now
the,
like...
through the Microsoft Store, which you don't need
right,
to
Right, through
use.
The Microsoft Store. So if you make a Windows game and you distribute it through Microsoft Store, which is not the only way to distribute it, then yes.
Well, this is another issue here, right? Which I think is another existential threat, maybe not quite, but close. A major threat for Apple is the threat that they will be told... they can't have an app store monopoly, right? That's right. Another big risk. It's not just the money of in-app purchases, but it's something that would, for example, mandate that they allow sideloading of iOS apps. And yeah. On one level, and again, I'm really ambivalent about this because I actually agree that the Mac is better than iOS because I can install whatever the hell I want on my Mac, even sure. though most people probably shouldn't. I can choose to do that, and I hear what Apple says about protecting users from malware and stuff. Like we've seen that with Mac malware, right? Like they
just,
will.
Just
they
this
will,
past week,
they will
there
step
was that
you
patch for 11.3.
Yeah, they will step yeah. you through the process of doing bypassing all of Apple's security to install malware, and people will fall for it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there are risks, right? Absolutely, there are absolutely risks where if sideloading is an option that is sort of semi-blessed, then it opens up a way in which apps can get on there and potentially even bypass whatever security is enacted for those sideloaded apps, which then potentially turns to security risk. Now, you can make the argument, it's like, well, yeah, but your job is still to keep this secure, so you need to do the best job you can, right? Like, there is no perfect security on any system, even on the locked down iOS App Store. And in fact, as many people argue, there's a lot of stuff on the App Store right now that even if it's not malware, is a scam that is gotten through your, you know, your vetting process too. So it's not as though your platform is totally safe, and it will never be totally safe. And there's an argument for not making it easier for you to get those things on, but if the answer is just, well, you need to work harder to get it to work right, then that's it's harder for, I think, Apple to argue against that. It's like not like you can just be like, well, since you let sideloading happen, like we don't, you know, avoids the warranty. We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's still your job to keep the platform secure.
Yeah, and this is, you know, since Apple hasn't been doing a great job with curating the App Store, right? That's the other thing. Is like if there weren't all these stories of all these scams on the App Store,
mm-hmm.
It would be different, right? And that is a gotcha for Apple. Like, you did a bad job. You've done a bad job. You can't lean back on curating when we can point to so many different ways where you failed
right.
to curate the store.
It's not even about security in that place either. It's not technological security,
yeah,
right?
They do scan, and although it is a little bit, but like it's... But
so much stuff can go around that.
Yeah.
Even if you had the most technologically yeah. secure system, people will still figure out ways to social engineer it, right? And basically trick people into giving you money because you can't, technologically, you can't protect against that.
Yeah, so I can see a scenario where they're mandated to do sideloading, and it would be very much like it is on the Mac, which is you probably shouldn't do this, but
right.
there it is if you want to do it, and then there will be other security issues that will come up. And I honestly, it is hard for me not to look at what they've done on the Mac as a test case as well
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
iOS, which is on the Mac, Apple has been building all of these different ways to provide a level of scrutiny and security for software that isn't yep. passed through the Mac App Store. And it's the, you know, it's getting them all signed. It's the whole notarization yep. thing. You can bypass it, but you have to take many steps to get there. And it having done that, could Apple do that on iOS? Of course they could. And they would be able to say, well, it's not the same as being in the App Store, but we are going to make sure that you have a developer ID and that we can kill it if you do something bad, and that you have to notarize it, which gets a basic scan through our servers, and that if you fail on those levels, you can still run it, but it's much, much harder, and there'll be many more warnings, and you'll have to turn off settings. It'll be scary. And, you know, I that could totally happen on iOS. If they were forced to go that route, they would do that, and it would be, you know, it would be okay. And in fact, I would like to see that, only because there are things not allowed on iOS that are, it's super frustrating that they're not allowed.
Yep.
And that we can do on the Mac, and we know that they're basically the same in many ways. So
it's funny. I installed
is coming, right? Change is coming. Whether Apple does it or not, something is going to happen here.
I installed the beta this week. Installed, quote unquote. I signed up for the beta of the Xbox Cloud Gaming Service, which is now available via the browser on iOS, and I was surprised.
Right.
It works pretty well, actually, in the browser. But part of me was like, man, this would probably work even better if it were an app. So, you know, I don't know. Is that an argument one way or the other? It's like, web apps, it's a pretty sweet solution. You can still make stuff work. I don't know.
So anyway, that's all going on. That's one of the things that is going on.
That's one of the things that's going on.
Did you buy any Apple products this morning?
I bought the Siri remote.
Yeah.
Could not resist getting the new Siri remote. I don't think it will. It's interesting. I think it gets close to replacing my Logitech remote, because I think there are things it does better than the Logitech remote, and there are things it can do that the Logitech remote can't do. Like, there's no Siri, obviously, in the Logitech remote. I use the Logitech remote less now for controlling other devices. Like, I've occasionally used it to control the Xbox, but, you know, mainly if I'm using the Xbox, I'm using a controller. Mainly if I'm using the Switch, I'm using a Switch controller. So the biggest advantage it has is that it can turn on all those other devices. But because I use the Harmony Hub and Homebridge, I could basically keep that there without using the remote, because then I can still use Siri to say, you know, turn on the Xbox or turn on the Switch. And it can just use the IR blaster to send out the right codes. I don't even have to use the remote for that. So it could be that the Apple TV new remote could be, like, you know, the only remote that I use for the most part. I'm curious to see how it plays out in that way. Because, I don't know. It's promising. I like the idea of having just one remote again. And, not having to decide if I'm using the Siri remote or my Harmony. But that will depend on how good it is at all those things.
Yeah. Yeah, I bought an Apple TV new generation because I gave Jamie my Apple TV, and I was like, well, I'll just buy the new Apple TV when it comes out. And then it didn't come out. I thought it was going to come out like in the fall or maybe in the summer, and now here it is in the spring. And I thought, well, you know, again, it's I do write about this stuff, and so having the latest generation version around, it's probably not a bad idea. So, and then honestly, Dan, I also looked at the price of the standalone remote, and I thought, well, if I'm going to spend that, I might as well just buy the box. It comes with a remote. I'll do that.
I won't even say I was tempted for the reason that I don't have a 4K TV, and there's nothing between the fact the remote works with it, and I've had this Apple TV for years and has basically, you know, paid for itself at this point. And the new color calibration stuff works on the existing Apple TV. Like, I just didn't have a compelling reason to upgrade to it. I don't play enough games. I don't need more storage. All those extra, like, new technologies it supports, they don't do anything for me because my TV is, you know, 6 years, 7 years old. At some point when I get a 4K TV, I will probably upgrade and get a new box, but who knows what that will look like by the time I get around to doing that.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new remote and seeing what it is. And I have not yet bought an iPad Pro, although I probably will buy a 12.9 iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. And here's my rationale there. And this is me having learned my lessons, which is, if you go online and order an iPad Pro right now, which as we're recording this, it's 9:40 a.m. Pacific, they ship late June. And yep. I've been through this before. I know that whenever they start to ship to customers, they'll be in stores and I will be able to pick one up the same day in my local Apple store at some point in late May. So I'm not going to even bother with an order. I've done this two-step a couple of times now where I've ordered an online order and it's going to come in June and then it's available at my local store and I cancel my online order and make an order for my local store and go get it. Because, as we've discussed here before, Apple has two different sets of inventory, the ones that are for people in the Apple stores and the ones who are for people ordering online. And I am 100% convinced I will be able to get one in an Apple store before that, before late June. So.
And I, for me, I have no compelling reason for a new iPad right now. That said, WWDC is around the corner.
I know.
And
so here's
part
the
of me thinks maybe an announcement there will compel me to pick up a new iPad.
Yes. And here's the other reason I'm hesitating is I don't use enough storage to really merit a terabyte
but you configuration, want the RAM.
But I want the RAM, or do I? And the answer is,
yeah, that's a
good
question.
I might if what is a WWDC seems to me like the RAM matters.
Right.
But it's kind of floating out there. And I'll tell you, the difference between getting a 256 and a 1 terabyte is enormous. It's like $700. It's a huge
Holy
price
cow.
Difference. Is the difference because they're buying a $1,200 iPad. It's like, it's not cheap, but like I use my iPad all the time. I'm not sure I am emotionally prepared to buy a $2,000 iPad.
It's a lot of iPad.
And I use the iPad a lot, but that is a lot.
Yeah, man, that is not cheap.
Right?
Huh?
Yeah, that's a terabyte iPad.
I like
with
when
cellular.
It tells you the Wi-Fi plus cellular, of course, is the one that has special deals available. It's like, please don't balk at the $2,000 price. We can get you special deals.
Special deals, yeah. Follow me for special deals. Great deals on these. Except I already have an AT&T plan that's already got an iPad on it,
right.
So there's no deals.
I mean, I'm not in the market for a 12.9. Anyways, I would be in the market for an 11. I think I'm very happy with the 11-inch size. But even that, wow, even that is like, you want to go up to 1 terabyte, $1,500.
Whew. Yeah.
That's pricey. It's like, that's more than my, it's way more than the MacBook Air I have, which has the same processor. No. This is a weird world that we're entering into here with the, everything on the same processor. It's just it requires some recalibration of thought, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And that is a place where WWDC will make a big difference because right now, again, I cannot imagine. I'm trying to figure out scenarios in which I would turn to my iPad instead of my M1 Air right now. And the answer is, right now, there's not really a great reason for me to do it. A couple months from now, who knows?
Who knows?
There's something compelling about that iPad, but going to have to wait till then.
Yeah. All right. Well, what a week. Maybe next week will be less interesting. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be.
Yeah. Who knows?
We'll see. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We appreciate your support, and we will see you next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.